Now, the pundits, I'm sure you know, are saying that if you're going to have any chance at all, weather is a factor, turnout, because of turnout being a big factor, that Mr. D'Amato's supporters are loyal, the kind of people who would come out in any weather, the kind of people that will vote on Tuesday. Do you worry about that?
I always worry about everything. But in answer to that, may I say, the poll just taken by the New York Times, which shows me still adequately ahead, also shows that my people who support me are more constant in their conviction of supporting me than those who support my opponent. And I believe that as the days have gone on, it is borne in on the people of my state who are going to vote in the Republican primary, that I've got the competence to represent this state, that if you want to win this seat, I'm the one, the most likely to win it. But you're not going to win it with a brand new product who's just learning how to sit up and take nourishment in terms of this kind of a campaign in the state of New York for the United States Senate, and that he will not fill these shoes. So while I'm concerned about every aspect of the campaign, I must say that I believe Republicans will turn out. There's now been interest engendered in the campaign in terms of this attack which was made on me, which has livened up a lot of people to the fact that you can't stay home and get me nominated. And therefore, I have every feeling that I will be. Though I don't predict elections, I cannot tell you, I will win. All I can tell the people is if I win, I'll serve them well, as I have.
Would you go as far as to say then that the commercials Mr. D'Amato has made and the injection of the age and health issues have perhaps been a blessing in disguise for your
campaign? I think they stirred up interest in the sense of opposition is interest too for that kind of campaign. But I don't welcome that as a way of campaign. I would much rather have fixed it up on the issues, and not only for the enlightenment of the people, but also there's something that comes back to one when one campaigns. You learn a lot from getting out there on the hustle and seeing and facing the questions and the answers and the ideas. I will say that I don't know how much my opponent has to contribute. I really don't. You know, mostly it's been throwing a lot of dust in the air because I've cast 10,000 votes as a senator of the United States. 10,000. Well, I'm sure some of those were wrong. So it isn't, you know, it isn't hard to pick out this one or that one or the other one. But we haven't had a chance to turn to the opposition and say, well, what would you do? I'm talking about the tail, not these big generalities. I'll cut here and I'll cut there and I'll cut the other. I'm talking about responsibility. How are you going to do it? You're not going to let people starve in this country. If you are, we ought to know it from my opposition. So I think that I would rather have seen the campaign as a campaign of public enlightenment. But this is the way it is, and I believe it has engendered interest. Cause sparks.
Some people say, why doesn't Jake Javits let go at this point? Why doesn't he step aside for you?
Jake Javits isn't made that way to let go when he has a deep conviction and conscience that the times have a role for him, which is, I think, almost nobody is indispensable. But considering the fact that it's going to take a New York senator a long, long, long time to get my credit cards. He has a role which cannot be rejected, at least not by me.
What are you going to do about the liberalism and the mood of the country as a whole, which has been described as a more conservative sweep this time around? Do you think that will hurt you?
I really don't, and I'll tell you why. I don't believe that it's a conservative or a liberal sweep. What I think it is there are new issues. And there are new ways of looking at issues. Let me give you a very practical example. One of the main tenets that I've been working for some years is to take out of government certain of the functions which can be discharged by business. Now let me give you three instances briefly. One is daycare centers. 50% of the women of the country are working. More would work if they had a place to park their children in a decent, healthy atmosphere. Now, in many countries, daycare is a function of the employer in private business. There are daycare centers in factories. and as indeed factories ought to be, educational institutions too. When you're unemployed, you shouldn't just draw unemployment. You should upgrade your skills, and if you don't have a high school diploma, or you're interested in some other a pursuit that's going to help you as a human being and a worker, why shouldn't you do that when you're unemployed, and instead of sitting around and walking down to get your unemployment check? So that's point one, again. And that's especially applicable to minority youth, which needs training and needs orientation to get into the entry job into the economy, and in many cases to be brought up to the starting line, many cases of the minorities, to be brought up to the starting line economically so that you get on with equal opportunity to those who are not of that particular minority group without artificiality. The third thing which interests me very greatly in terms of this effort for business is health. We've got tens of millions of workers who are under health plans. Now, the difficulty with health plans is that everything's so expensive now in health, and the reason is that not enough people might participate. That's why we talk about that as a national health insurance. It's really a national health plan. Well, if business could assure us that X millions would not be under the plan, it would make it very much simpler to bring in many people who are not brought in today or have inadequate insurance. That's a business function. And it's true of tens of millions today. So just like I have been the author with one other senator, Senator Williams of New Jersey, just as I have been the author of what's called ERISA, that is the Employment Retirement Security Act, which makes the whole business function of private pensions safeguarded and secure so that the pensioner is sure he'll get his pension from the time, which is something he wasn't a bit sure of before 1974 when this law took effect. Then you take out millions of workers out of the health system, just as I did it in the pension system. And the pension system, by the way, now is safeguarded by a government insurance corporation, like the ones that insure bank deposits or brokerage accounts. The pension system is the greatest way in which to deal with the ceiling that Social Security is bumping its head against. In other words, that the young worker will not pay a high enough Social Security tax to be able to give those who retire on Social Security a real living opportunity. So the supplement or the addition of a private pension becomes critical if you're going to deal rationally with Social Security. That's the kind of thinking which, in my judgment, is new thinking. Not liberal, not conservative. It simply meets the events of our time.
How would you describe your opponent?
I think my opponent has two factors through my eyes. I'm prejudiced, and I want to make that very, very clear. You asked me how I describe him. I can say that. One, I think he's a young man in a big, big hurry, in the sense that he's really not prepared for this world. Certainly not to succeed me in terms of the space which New York has made. With an excellent colleague that I am, and myself, in the Senate of the United States. And secondly, aside from being a young man, he really hasn't done his homework. It takes an enormous education and an enormous acquaintance with the currents of movement in our world. And my observation of him is that it's superficial. Once over lightly, pick up some things with which you can damage your opponent, and the public will be dazzled by the fact that you're hitting him every minute with a light blow, but you're hitting him. And so I think that when he gets over that, if he can, he may become an appreciable public servant, but he's not ready for it.
Is he the biggest obstacle, supposing you are the winner, facing the Democrats? What problems do you then see?
New problems, which I haven't even begun to think about. But I'll think about those, assuming that I'm successful.
And in the primary, then, is the biggest hurdle for you, do you
think?
Right now,
I don't know. I can't tell you about the general election.
Okay.
Don't waste it.
You'll laugh if I tell you something. I brought my mail over with me this morning, and I threw it out, unfortunately. I had a letter from the committee talking to me about Jake Javits, so I was reading it on the way over here.
Just look at Liz, please.
Oh, well, I expected.
Our friends from organized labor that made the trip. Would you come on up and join us here?
Please, Abe.
Lou Chapman and all my friends, Wayne, all of them. Our friends from organized labor.
Gather around.
And everybody gather around. And so there's a lot of them.
That's John Barney.
Ron, we ought to give you the first word, so why don't you go around?
Well, Senator, it's indeed a pleasure for me and for Barbara Zartman, who's been working so hard on your behalf here in upstate New York, to welcome you here today and to bring this illustrious group with you of people who have been noted in the area of public service for many, many years. And Senator, we wish you the very best, because we know that you are the very best, and you represent the best in all the public servants. Ladies and gentlemen, Senator Jacob Jackson.
Thank you very much, Ron, and thanks to Barbara. Thanks to you both. You were my earliest and strongest supporters in respect of the primary, when we all knew it was going to be a primary struggle. Before the state committee meeting in June, you heartened me tremendously. I don't think I would have undertaken this without that kind of backing and knowing that there was a real feeling for me in the state. I respect this city and Monroe County very much. And here's Steve May, who was your former mayor and a very old friend. Steve, welcome.
Steve.
I would first like to thank Barbara and Ron, who, as I say, were strong, early, and indefatigable supporters and encouragers for my undertaking this primary. And my friends in organized labor do me very proud by appearing here, notwithstanding the lateness of the plane and the fact that it must have inconvenienced them all morning. And I believe that they will make a very material difference in the outcome of this particular primary. They have really worked hard and very personally, especially with those in the labor movement who are enrolled in the Republican Party. And I wish to thank also Joanne Van Zandt, a county legislator, who has other engagements, but nonetheless came to greet me. I'm very appreciative of that. And please feel free to go and do whatever you would need to do. I thoroughly appreciate your being here. And to Lou Morin, the county manager, again, my appreciation and thanks for good government in the county and for being out here to do me honor. I have with me, as you can see, men and women whom I consider to be tops for our state in my party. Of course, you know, all of you, the man who was Nelson Rockefeller's strong right arm through all his service, and then governor of the state of New York, Malcolm Wilson, sitting at the end of the table. And next to him, Ned Regan, who now our controller, who, like myself, won as the only Republican in a statewide ticket at a time when, unhappily for us, the ticket was not successful, who is here on my left. And then on my right, the people's lawyer, Judge Lou Lefkowitz, a man who has really done our party very proud and has made a fantastic record in our state, who succeeded me as Attorney General. And at the end of the table here, Jim Emery, a very gifted leader of the Republican minority in the Assembly, and I hope very much soon, the Republican majority. We'll be joined also by the Majority Leader of the State Senate, Warren Anderson, at our next stop in Syracuse. And then behind me, aside from the labor leaders who are here, and Steve, whom I've already identified, Constance Cook, who is co-chairman of my campaign committee, former Assemblywoman, Marion Granowitz, who is vice chairman of our state committee, a state Republican committee, Abe, I've already introduced. And Al Marshall, who is right behind me, chairman of my campaign committee. I guess that's about it. Now, I'd just like to say a word or two to you, and then, with your permission, introduce two or three of my colleagues. Every city has a special connotation in my state. I've just been to Buffalo. The outstanding thing there, to which I referred in the few words I said, was the Labor Management Committee, which is headed by a very gifted labor leader named George Wessel and a very public-spirited industrialist named Dan Roebelin. Here in this city, you have one tradition which is of enormous importance to me, and that is the tradition of great technology for New York. And one of the nicest things that I have been able to do, and I have suffered in respect of this campaign, and I've suffered in other campaigns before this, from the fact that great prominence is given to my activities in the nation in terms of high level, what's called macroeconomics, and in the world in respect of foreign policy. And that tends to dim in the public mind those local responsibilities, which are absolutely as essential as anything else I do. And we have a little instance of that here, which gave me enormous pride and pleasure. And that is that the University of Rochester, very great educational institution, which has great capability for technological breakthroughs, has an experimental laser, LASER. You know what that is? It's a light which is infinitely superior to X-ray or any other means for breaking up matter. And I took such a very great interest in that that I was able, by using some credit cards of my own, to have the federal government assist the University of Rochester here very recently with $8 million, which was indispensable to it, in order to complete this particular job. Now, that is characteristic for me because I am a deep believer in technology and we are very badly behind in it. And I'd like you to know that it's also a very profound service to my state that I serve as the chairman of the Republican Economic Task Force, composed, which is an element of the Republican senators, and is composed of senators from various states, which drafts the Republican Economic Program. And since 77, this program has concentrated upon accelerated depreciation and other allowances in order to enhance American productivity, American competitiveness, and also to materially enlarge our research and development. I can't tell you how critical that is to breaking inflation. There's nothing we can do, literally nothing. Balancing budgets or economizing or stripping ourselves to the bone and forgetting all about the lame, the halt, the blind, the poor, and the young. Even if we did all that, we would not begin to make the impact on inflation. which is made by materially improving our productivity. With a $2,400 billion economy, if you make a 1% improvement in productivity, you are dealing with the difference between recession and prosperity. So that's the place to keep your eye on the ball. And of all of the cities in my state, with a possible exception of New York City, possible exception, this city can contribute the most along those lines. Now that takes large capital, and we want that capital to come from private sources. And so I have devoted myself also to a more intelligent taxing system. For example, to exempt from taxation reasonable amounts of interest or dividends to encourage people to invest. Really, if we're going to have a tax cut, and we certainly should have one without any question, it needs to be targeted, in my judgment, at least 50% to these business purposes, which can transform the American economy from its present status, where it's lagging behind Germany and Japan and many others in competitiveness, to a new status where it will again be number one competitor in the world. And that will absolutely remake our economic situation. So I use this moment to remind Rochesterians about that, and also to recall in his city the memory of Ken Keating. I had the honor to come up here the other day, not long ago, just a really matter of days, to dedicate the Kenneth B. Keating Federal Building. And I hope those of you who've not been by there will see it. Ken was, in my eyes, one of the most distinguished people ever to come from here, or indeed any other part of my state. Very close friend, and amusingly enough, we had the same birth date, May 18th. Ken was a little older than I was, but we had the same birth date, and had tremendous pleasure on occasion in blowing out the candles on twin cakes on our joint birthday. I hope very much that you will, as have already in their leadership role, Ron Starkweather and Barbara Zartman, give me the necessary assistance now in this primary. A primary is a one-on-one operation. It takes phone calls, it takes personal visits, it takes a real dedication to bringing out the individual to vote. The answer to my success tomorrow will be the turnout in the state. If we have a minor turnout, 12.5%, 15%, I am very concerned about the result. If we have even a moderate turnout, 20%, it will make all the difference in the world. So I'm very grateful to Ron and Barbara, and I beg you, those of you who are here, who would help me in this primary, which is close fought, to turn out the vote. And I especially address that to my friends in the labor movement. They've got 200,000 in the movement, that is in the actual members of the AFL-CIO, 200,000 enrolled Republicans. That probably means a million, really, in round figures, if you take the four or five of a family and close friends. And that can make the absolutely decisive difference in respect of this campaign. So I thank you so much. I'd say this to Abe and his associates, for being here and for giving me the tremendous support which I've had from organized labor. And now, ladies and gentlemen, we'll give the press a chance to ask questions as soon as we've made a few brief presentations. Yes, sir.
I am neither a Republican. I'm a Democrat. And we are here, a number of Democrats who are out for Javits to be reelected.
Yeah. Thank you, Abe.
That's why we are here, and you will see us active in the campaign.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Abe. Thank you very much. That was a good opening speech. And now I have the honor to present to you the former governor of the state of New York, Governor Malcolm Wilson.
I will stay where you are. I won't take a moment, Senator.
No.
I'm just glad to see so many of my friends and anything that I would say after the fine statement made by the senator deserves no more attention than the footnote. But I did come with the senator today because I've had the pleasure in working with him for so many years, and I wanted to be sure that all of my friends in upstate New York were aware of the fact that he has my full support. And he has that because for 24 years he has served all of the people of the state, regardless of their political affiliation, in a magnificent manner which has won the admiration of all of his colleagues in the Senate. I saw this young man here, and that reminded me that just last week, in the heat of what has been a very bitterly fought primary, Senator Javits went down to Washington and engaged in the debate and fought ardently for the amendments of the Higher Education Act. That's the federal act which provides loans for young people who go to college. He was one of the principal authors of that legislation, went around the books. There are some very important amendments which have captured little public attention, but they're terribly important to the young people who would take advantage of that act. And the senator went down very quietly last week and took 5 hours out of a day when he could otherwise have been campaigning in this state to give his support to that measure. I mention that because that is typical of the kind of service that he renders. It was a song in South Pacific. We all remember Mario Lanza, I guess, singing it. Once you have found him, never let him go. The people of the state of New York have found Jack Javits, and they've found him never to be wanting. They've been finding him on the line for them all over the state, and I'm satisfied that if the people come out to the polls tomorrow, my fellow Republicans, having found Jack, we're not going to let him go.
I was very much disappointed. I was expecting Malcolm Wilson to break out into a song. So maybe on the way back he'll give me a couple of words. I'm here with Malcolm and the rest of the folks here for one big reason. I believe in Jack Javits as a good Republican and as a hell of a good public servant. You know, it's easy for those of us in public life who come before the public on re-election time to simply put out some piece of literature and try to acquaint people. But you've been reading about this man day in and day out in all the years he served in Washington. It's top news. Let me remind all of you of the high esteem in which he's held by colleagues at both sides of the aisle because of his wonderful work. As far as I'm concerned, strictly on the basis of ability, competence, integrity, and service to the people of this state, he deserves not only the nomination tomorrow, but elections well in November. And I've got one simple message now to urge all of you, Republicans, and even if you're Democrats, if you're no Republicans, this is the big day tomorrow. All this work is for naught unless you turn the people out. The more, the better. The more people will give him a little heart to know that he's appreciated. So I'm urging all of you today and this evening and tomorrow before the polls close, get the vote out, vote yourselves if you're a Republican, and get the others to vote the same way. If you do that, you'll be saying thank you to a great public servant.
Thank you very much. Controlling that Reagan, who broke through so remarkably.
Thank you, Jack. I've known Jack for 15 years. I've worked with him in local, both city and county government, like Lou Morin and Steve. We've all been associated in local government in Western New York, and we all know just how much Jack has meant to us, cutting the red tape, getting the grants, and bringing Washington bureaucracy back to Western New York and serving the people here. He's done it. He's done it remarkably well. He has helped everybody in this community in upstate New York. And fortunately for me, and I think I can speak for Steve and Lou, all of us that have served in local government has helped all the constituents that we represent. The combination of that record and Ron Starkweather, I think, is going to be unbeatable tomorrow. Thank you.
Thank you. We have a word from Jim Emery, the minority leader of the State Assembly.
Thank you very much. I join with Senator Anderson, who is not here. He's going to meet us at our next stop and go on to Albany. As leaders of the Republicans in both the Assembly and the Senate, to urge all of the Republicans in this state to support Senator Javits. Senator Anderson had the privilege of nominating Senator Javits for his new term of office at the state committee meeting in New York City a few months ago, and I seconded that nomination. Because as two leaders of the legislature, we know of the keen work and the insight that he has into the problems of New York State. We serving constituents in Albany have many problems with the federal government. We look to them for relief and assistance. And I can assure you that on every occasion we have called upon Senator Javits, he has responded with not only advice but with action for the people of this state. He has the integrity, he has the intelligence, and he has the hard work and ability to represent all New Yorkers in a very crucial time in our history. And I would urge all of you, Republicans, Democrats, to join with us in seeking out Republicans tomorrow to support Senator Javits for a new term.
Thank you. Just one other introduction, ladies and gentlemen, which I omitted to make, and that is of my campaign manager, John Trubin of New York, who is also now. I'd like also to acknowledge and thank the town leaders who are here today, and their work will be absolutely crucial with Ron and Barbara. And I'd like to acknowledge them, if I may, by name. Ann Tatelbaum, who is Brighton Town Leader. Where I am. Thank you. And Dave Finger, Chile Town Leader.
We pronounce that Chilai.
Chilai. Chilai Town Leader, instructor. And Peter Farmacola, Gates Town Leader.
He had to leave, sir.
He had to leave. Shirley Munch, Parenton Town Leader. Shirley
had to leave.
Nancy Carlton Pittsford, Deputy Leader. Nancy, thank you. Bud Saylor, Webster Deputy Leader. Bud, back at the ranch, eh? Henry Capolino, 18th Legislative District Leader. Is Henry still here? And Barbara Diamond, 23rd Legislative District Leader. And also Rita Shine, President of the Women's Federation of the County. Yeah. And behind us, Jerry Brasley, back of the room, AFL-CIO Council here in the Thank you all very much, and now let's have the questions from the press. I hope you'll forgive me for holding a press conference together with this. It's the best we can do. Yes.